Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, Episode 29.
Prepare for takeoff. Guiding you down publishing's dark alleyways.
Rubbing it in, like salt in a wound.
Expounding on the greatness of science fiction and fantasy.
A science fiction writer should try to combine the intimately human with the grandly cosmic.
Hi, this is Tobias Bakel, author of Crystal Rain.
And taking themselves way too seriously.
I've had many, many a giggle over it.
Very dramatic. Very nice.
That sounded really realistic, didn't it?
From the Singularity Audio Studios in San Diego, California, your hosts, Sean and Sam.
Then that's where you cue the cheering.
All right, we're going back to press. We're going back to press. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. My name is Sean Farrell.
And I'm Sam Wins.
And today we present part two of our Comic-Con special report. But before we get to that, you know, this morning, Sam, I completed a year-long endeavor.
Yeah?
Yeah. I know you're dying to know what it is.
You just see me over here twitching with anticipation.
Well, you're always sitting over there twitching, but no. I finished the last episode of the last season of Farscape.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're thinking right now, because everyone was thinking the same thing.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I've already seen the miniseries. That was the first Farscape I ever saw, was the miniseries. So the whole time I've known how the whole thing ends. But the reason why is because I didn't have Sci-Fi Channel when Farscape was actually on. I didn't have cable. I was in college. But when the miniseries came on, I was like, ooh, this looks cool. I'm going to watch that, even though I knew it was a TV show before. So finally, it took me a year through Netflix.
Well, that's kind of good. Does that make you less disappointed in the way it ended? I know a lot of people were kind of disappointed in how it ended, so.
Well, that's the thing. When I saw the miniseries, I had no expectations because I hadn't seen the show.
Right.
So I wasn't disappointed with the ending at all. Even though I really liked the show, I wish it could have continued, but I have to say that the last season was definitely the weakest,
yeah,
in my opinion, of all the seasons. So I wasn't completely surprised that it got canceled, but they were trying a new thing. You know, it happens.
What happened? Do you think writers left? You know, traditionally a lot of shows become weaker when their strongest writers leave or, you know, some creative force moves on.
Well, it seemed that...
There's some Star Trek...
Yeah.
Season that I can think of that happened with.
Well, to me, season four was a little bit of a reset. They sort of had this big story arc that went through seasons one through three. And then that changed a lot in season four because Scorpius' position changed. So they just went off in a new direction. They added new characters and they, you know, said goodbye to some older characters.
To mix it up and it didn't necessarily work as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I still liked it, you know.
Yeah.
But if I owned the entire series on DVD, season four would be the one that I watched the least.
I would agree with you there.
Yeah. But anyway, that's enough about Farscape. Oh, you know, I did meet Ben Browder at Comic-Con, which is pretty darn cool.
Ah, nice lead-in, Sean. I knew there had to be a point to this, really.
I'm a true professional.
Totally subtle. Nobody got that.
No, not at all. But unfortunately, I did not interview him, and those are the interviews that we will present today, the Stargate Atlantis interviews I did at Comic-Con, with Joseph Malazzi, executive producer, Jewel State, also or really known for Firefly, David Hewlett, and Joe Flanagan.
I'm so happy for you. I saw the pictures of you grinning like a fool next to...
I really was, too.
Yeah, you were, because I know Stargate is like your all-time favorite, so I was a little envious, I have to admit. I need to get a press pass, I think, next time like you do, and be like your cabana girl or something, your tag along.
Well, but you go there with Mysterious Galaxy, too. Would they give you two different passes?
Well, I have a exhibitor pass, but
right.
That's different than a press pass.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, you know, as you know, in panels, they'll have a press section.
Uh-huh.
And the press is often allowed to come up afterwards and talk to them and take photos and... whatever, try to arrange interviews, whereas just an exhibitor, you're just somebody who sells stuff kind of thing. I mean, not that I don't have access to authors.
But you think they would give you a press pass and your exhibitor pass? Or do they just give Mysterious Galaxy like 12 passes and they don't even know that you have one of them?
That's pretty much it.
That's
just
it? Okay.
They get a list of names, but I don't think they'd give us a press pass because I don't...
Well, no.
I mean, as for Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, maybe they'd give me a press pass.
You could get one. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to look into that next year.
I think I could have gotten you one this year because I think I'm allowed to have a guest or two or, you know, an assistant or whatever.
Why didn't you, you rat bastard?
Well, you had plans, girl. We'll talk about those.
Here. I know. It's true. I'm always too busy during Comic-Con. Yeah.
But these interviews I did were actually press junkets that were done after the Atlantis panel. So once they did their panel, they, you know, walked through the back corridors and into this little room. And luckily, really, very lucky for us, there were only maybe 6 or 7 other reporters there. So instead of doing, you know, press conference style where they sit at a table and we throw questions at them, they're like, you guys just want to do individual interviews? And of course, I didn't have anything prepared to do individual interviews. So I spent the next 5 minutes.
Did you wing it?
Oh, man. Did I wing it? Yeah.
Sweating, pouring down your brow as you were frantically thinking of questions.
Yeah, well,
that would be me if I were in your shoes.
Luckily, I'm so familiar with the show.
Yeah.
And I keep up on all the news that it wasn't difficult. You know, I didn't feel like it was difficult. I sound pretty calm in the interview, so.
All right. Sean's a very good actor, ladies and gentlemen.
I do some acting. Actually, next week I have to do some pickups for a film I did in January.
Awesome.
Which is funny, because when we did the film in January, it was the coldest day in San Diego in, like, 90 years. And we're out there in the freaking woods, right, wearing layers and layers of clothing, and then we're doing rain scenes. So it's, like, 50 degrees outside, and they're dumping water on us, and we have to stand there in these heavy, wet clothes for hours on end. And now we're going to do the pickups, and it's going to be the hottest month of the year in San Diego, muggy, humid, still dumping rain on us.
And it's supposed to be the same scene? That's interesting.
It's the same. Well, the whole thing shot in black and white, so.
Oh, okay. So it's not going to make that, because, you know, the lights are very different, so.
The light will be different.
But I guess in black and white, it's not going to be that much of a difference.
No.
Meanwhile, people in Minnesota and Montana are mocking us right now for being like, oh my God, 50 degrees, and we were wet, and it was just so cold.
Yeah, but try standing around for 3 hours when you're soaking wet, and it's 50 degrees. And there's a breeze going.
It's true.
It's not the most comfortable thing in the world.
Once when caroling in Montana at Christmas, my feet literally froze to the ice after standing there for a few minutes singing a couple of songs.
That is hysterical.
That's when we actually were like, okay, it's time to turn it in. It's too cold to do this.
I so wish I could have seen that happen to you.
Yeah. Thank you. To laugh at my pain. Yes. Yes.
Well, we got a few minutes here. What was your favorite Comic-Con experience? Fill us in on what you did, because everyone knows what I did. They've heard the interviews and they've seen the pictures.
Oh, wow. That's a hard one, because, like I said earlier, well, let me restate this. Con, there is so much happening constantly that you have to pick and choose. And it's hard, because at any given time, there's 10 different things I want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10 different people I want to be meeting, 10 different panels I want to be in. Signings I want to attend.
Not to mention that you might have to stand in line for 2 or 3 hours just to get into one of those panels.
Exactly. I stood in line for 2 hours to get into the Battlestar Galactica panel, which was worth it, I have to say. It was the women of Battlestar.
I just went to the press junket.
Whatever.
I was like, this far away.
Did you get to talk to Katie Sackhoff?
No.
I murder you.
No, I didn't. There were like 80 press people there. It was insane in that
room. Yeah, I bet.
But it was fun.
Yeah. Those ladies are fine. Let me just say that.
And they all had cleavage that they wanted
they
to
did.
Share.
Oh my
except
God.
For six.
Katie Sackhoff, she, all of them are, you know, really beautiful on the show and each have their very different type of beauty. In person, all of them much hotter.
You know what?
Especially Starbuck.
I don't care how old Mary O'Connell is.
She's gorgeous.
Oh, whoa.
Lucy Lawless. Oh, my God. And by the way, they announced, since they announced it at Comic-Con, Lucy Lawless is coming back in the next season. So they are going to.
And she will still be bad.
Thaw her out. Yeah. Yes. I'm excited to see what they're going to do with her character.
That'll be fun.
Characters, I should say.
So what else did you do though? I interrupted you. Sorry.
Oh no, that's okay. I went to the Blade Runner panel, which was fantastic. Ridley Scott was there and Sean Young and in fact, the guy who plays Tyrell, whose real name I'm forgetting, please forgive me, was staying at our hotel and I rode with him in the elevator and talked to him
really?
For like 15 minutes.
He was signing interviews for $20 a piece.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, that's funny. He's really nice.
Was it? I have mixed feelings about the whole $20 for an interview.
I know. I think that's kind of cheesy.
I mean, autograph, excuse me.
It's kind of cheesy to me, personally, but...
Cliff Simon was doing the same thing. He plays Ball in Stargate SG-1. I was walking by, and he's sitting there by himself at a table. I'm like, oh my God, that's Ball. So I went, I talked to him for a minute, but yeah, I just, I don't spend $20 to get anyone's signature.
I know. I don't either. And you know what? A lot of people do that. I mean, like Lou Ferrigno, the original Hulk from the 70s show, is there like every year at his booth, and you have to pay either one year he was promoting a book that he co-wrote or something, and he, you know, he wouldn't sign it. He wouldn't sign anything unless you bought the book. And yeah, you know, now he, and then he charges for the picture to sign and that. And I'm like,
I would do it all for free. If
not
I was in
that important to me, but yeah, you know, whatever. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was, I saw a lot of amazing panels, and on top of it, I went to an industry party Friday night. I got invited to the Dark Horse Comics / Gentle Giant Studios / Weta Workshop / Lucasfilm.
Jeez.
Yeah, party at a nice hotel on this, on their veranda that like overlooked all of San Diego, and they had ice sculptures and cocktails, and it was great. And I hung out with Chewbacca, and that was pretty awesome. That was pretty awesome. It's great.
The real Chewbacca?
Yeah, Peter Mayhew.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He's,
yes, I am a Star Wars nerd.
I know. Well, so am I. I'm in the fact. But you're talking to him, and of course he looks nothing like Chewbacca because he's not in a big hairy suit.
I'm sure he'd be happy to hear you.
Yeah, exactly. He's very tall, of course, and doesn't sound like Chewbacca because they obviously did not use human vocals for that.
They used a grizzly bear.
Not a grizzly bear.
A black bear.
No.
What kind of bear was it?
Sun bear, I'm pretty sure.
I just know the bear died like last year. It was tragic.
Yeah, it was tragic. I think he was in the Seattle Zoo.
Okay.
Anyways,
we just ended a whole
on,
new
I told
level.
You, yes. I challenge you, listeners, to defeat my nerddom. Beat that. Anyways, but talking to him, you know, but looking at him, his eyes were completely Chewbacca's eyes.
Oh, how funny.
Because he has those really bright blue eyes, and I don't know. It was kind of neat. Just be like, look at Chewbacca.
That's cool.
I got behind the ice sculpture. One of our group got behind the Star Wars ice sculpture, which was a big block, and pretended they were Han Solo frozen in carbonite, and we took pictures.
Nah. Very nice.
Which is really fun. So, yeah, and then we, every year, friends and I throw a huge party at Comic-Con called Exsanguine. It's actually Comic-Con's largest after party on Saturday night, and it was a blast. Once again,
very
sold
cool.
out, probably about 800 people. The music was fantastic. People went all out with their costumes. People were raging until 3 a.m. when it ended. And then there was a big after party that a friend of mine threw at a warehouse in town. So
After that.
After we didn't get back to the hotel around 6 a.m. Yeah. Yeah, we were pretty dragging on Sunday.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. Peter, how do you spell Mayhew?
Mayhew.
Man, I didn't know his last name, so you're better than me. My kind of random moment like that was Ben Browder, because I actually didn't get to meet him at the Stargate Press. I was just in the hallway and he walked by.
Cool.
Just randomly walking through, him and Christopher Judge just walked by.
Yeah.
But I grabbed him. And you know, his funny thing is, he's really nice, but he's got this sort of confident, I don't want to say cocky, but it is cocky. So there's cocky coolness about him, but it's okay because he's nice, you know? So he's shaking my hand, he's smiling at me, and he's giving me a look like, yeah, you think I'm cool. And I know it. And I'm okay letting you know that I know, you know?
Yeah.
But he's just smiling real big and shaking my hand. Doesn't say much.
Right.
But it was cool. I was like, man, I didn't think you could be cooler, but now I realize you are cooler.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
To react that way. It cracked me up. It was fun.
Yeah. It was great because, I mean, you see stars everywhere. You see people you admire all over the place. And the restaurant we were eating at, which, again, our hotel, Neil Gaiman was sitting there having dinner. And I was like, hey, Neil.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, he is, talk about a really nice guy.
I might have had a geekgasm really nice right there in the restaurant.
I know. Well, I have an embarrassing story about Neil Gaiman. Would you like to hear it?
Okay.
I know you'd want to.
We got a couple minutes here.
When he came and signed at our store a couple years ago for Anansi Boys, that was my first really big signing, and I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan, and so I completely made a fool of myself. I was a complete ass. I totally I was geeking out. I just, I'm working there and I'm trying to be, you know, like, hey, I'm cool. I'm calm. I deal with authors. But it was my first signing and it was Neil Gaiman. And I just, I was bumbling. I kept repeating myself. He was very sweet to me, but I'm sure he was like, where did they get this girl?
So man, I'm kind of embarrassed. That's your first one too.
I know. I'm kind of embarrassed to like approach him now because I wonder if he'll remember the bumbling bookstore girl. I don't know.
Well, it's funny because, you know, the first interview I ever did was with Ray Bradbury.
Yeah.
So it's like when you start off with such a huge icon like that in both cases.
Someone that you really admire.
You can't ease into it. All of a sudden, boom.
Exactly.
There you go.
You're sweating. Once again, the sweating pouring from every orifice. Just like your nervous twitch, like, hey Neil, how you doing? I'm Sam. Wipe your sweaty palms on your pants before you shake their hand.
Yep,
it's just terrible.
But it doesn't matter. You're sweaty again.
It's still sweaty, yeah. And I did get to sit next to a bunch of authors at signings. That part was cool. Mm. So Laurel K. Hamilton and Carrie Vaughn and Lauren Gilman. It was the Urban Fantasy panel. That was really fun. Cool. And the one person I wanted to stalk, Richard Morgan, I didn't meet him. I'm so sad.
How did you not make that happen?
Because I wasn't working the day that he was signing. And I was actually, once again, there's a million things happening at the same time. And I was with friends that I haven't, who live in Hawaii, who I haven't seen in a year, at another panel. Mm. And I was like, I'm not going to get up and, you know, that I was enjoying. I'm not going to get up and leave to go, you know, drool on Richard Morgan, who's probably busy and whatever.
Right.
So he has come to the store. He knows a lot of the staff. So I have the feeling he'll be back.
It'll happen. You know?
It'll happen at some point. But I was still like, that's the hard thing about con. Too many choices.
Yeah.
Too many hard choices like that.
Well, folks, that was Comic-Con. As you can see, there's more going on than any two people could hope to see. I mean, maybe between the two of us, we saw 1% of what happened there.
Yeah, exactly. What was it, the attendance? 140,000?
Well,
broke a record.
They had 140,000 there on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
It was just one day they had that many.
And they
there.
Sold out all 4 days. I was getting offers of people on the street to buy my badge if I wasn't going to be using it.
Yeah, wow.
Plan ahead, people.
Scalping tickets.
So plan ahead for next year because you will not want to miss it. It is just such a fun event.
I'm going to put up some more pictures on the website. The Stargate pictures are already up there, but I took a few more, including one of Sam in action working the booth.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's great.
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, it's a good picture. Otherwise, I wouldn't put it up. but we are going to, I know I would totally put it up to embarrass you.
I know.
We're going to take a short break.
I just hope it's the one I'm not flashing you. I hope it's not that one.
Oh, no. That one's on the desktop, but it's not going to go on
there.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Got it.
We'll take a little break here and then come back with the highly anticipated Stargate Atlantis interviews. And I did some special editing with this. I had a lot of fun with it. So thank you, everyone, for being patient. There's been some talk on the blog. People are waiting for this stuff. So it's coming up in just a minute. The day started just like any other day. Always does. Until I watched one of my closest friends die. Right in my arms. Nothing I could do. But his death was a beginning, not an end. And now I've been thrust into a timeless conflict of pyromaniac insects and instant mummification. A war within our very genetic makeup. And when the powers of the ancient world collide with modern technology, no one is safe. Not me, and certainly not you. I'm Dr. Phil D'Amato, NYPD Forensics, and the only way to save myself is to solve the mystery of the Silk Code. The Locus Award-winning novel by Paul Levinson comes to life in this free podcast novel. Journey into the ancient world, witness the wonder of ages past, and join Phil D'Amato in a struggle against forces both ruthless and unseen. Visit www.thesilkcode.blogspot.com to learn more about the author and the novel. And subscribe today at patiobooks.com. Join the battle, witness the wonder, or forever be victim to the awe and power of the Silk Code. Phil D'Amato is ready. Are you?
Paycheck and parking spot, but I don't really want to be in charge of anything.
Joseph Malazzi.
You were just talking about how you really like reading science fiction literature. So I, you know, this is a little off the subject of Atlantis, but who are some of your favorite authors? I'll ask you real quick.
You know, an author that basically I just discovered through a book club is John Scalzi, who I read Old Man's War and loved it and lent it to Brad Wright, who's the executive producer and creator on SG-1 and Atlantis, and he loved it. Then I lent it to David Hewlett, and he loved it. And basically, you know, we picked up a whole bunch of John Scalzi since, and I think Android Dreams was the last one that Hewlett read, and David's just been raving about it, which is when I got to pick up. And then other than that, I mean, got the classics. You know, I'm a big fan of Octavia E. Butler, dark but great. Bradbury, of course, David Brin, just because of the sense of humor he imparts to all, you know, everything he writes. My library in my office is like I have like five or six shelves full. It's essentially books and supervillain statues.
I feel like you just stole my bookshelf.
Oh, well, yeah. You know, if you're missing anything, drop by the studio and help yourself.
Hey, I'll be happy to drop by anytime. Let's move on to Atlantis here. What can you tell us about season four that you're most excited about?
Season four, I think more than any other season, will have a lot of focus on sort of the different interrelations between the characters. David mentioned it earlier today. He mentioned the fact that, he got this terrific scene with Ronan and in previous seasons it was always McKay and Shepard and McKay and Weir, but I mean we've taken pains this season because of the early start and because of the fact that we're producing 20 episodes instead of 40. We took advantage of the time we had to basically sit down and really map out some major arcs for not only the show as a whole but the different characters as well. And this season I think is just full of surprises, and for the most part fans will be thrilled, and some of them a few surprises that will come and just take them totally unaware. That's all I'm going to say right now.
You're introducing some new races this season, right?
Yeah, actually one of the races we're introducing, we're calling them the Travelers. Whenever I would write for SG-1, I always enjoyed the fact that when the team went through the gate they could always encounter a technologically advanced society, which is something that because of the way the Atlantis was set up in the Pegasus Galaxy, because the Wraith ran roughshod over any potential threats, the societies it would come up against would always be, formerly technologically advanced societies that are, just on the cusp of, sometimes, medieval or maybe even, early 1950s technology. And so we thought, well, what would be an interesting way to create a technologically advanced race? Well, since the Wraith always, pinpoint the civilizations and wipe them out when they reach a certain level of advancement, we thought, well, why don't we put them in ships? And so we created this race called the Travelers, and essentially what they do is they just sweep down after the Wraith have culled a planet, just pick it clean of the technology and use it on their ships, and basically so they just travel from planet to planet. They're always on the move. They're nomads.
So are they almost like scavengers?
Exactly like scavengers, yeah.
Where did that's a really interesting idea. What was the genesis of that?
As is often the case, it was just desperation to really, really want to find a means to get this type of story told. Sleepless nights and scotch. Recipe.
Okay, that sounds like you took that from Ronald Moore's cabinet.
Does he drink a lot of scotch? I don't know.
Well, he does a podcast where he does commentary for the episodes.
Drinking scotch, yeah.
Now, have you guys thought about this is a podcast, have you ever thought about using podcasts to help promote the Stargate?
We did a podcast, I think Sci-Fi did a podcast way back, in season two, and it's not something that we've really seriously considered. Just I think for time, it's not something that we don't want to do or avoiding for any specific reason. But you know, now that you mention it, it might be a great idea.
Well, if you need any help, I do have a podcasting business. Yeah, I gotta plug myself there.
I've got your card.
All right, looking beyond, I'm gonna assume here that Lance is gonna get picked back up because it has to. And that's what I'm gonna say here. What sort of things are you guys thinking far future that would be unexpected?
That's a good question, because as we speak right now, we're just spinning the last three stories of season four, and we know where we want to head in season five. We've set up this arc, a very dark arc, that you know, it's going to build to the end of season four and kind of leave things, you know, as is often the case, hanging. We know how we want to pay it off in season five, but this is just in general terms. You know, I describe season four as being dark, as being you know, full of surprises and more character moments. And you know, we're very excited about the show's fourth season. I honestly think it's the best season we've ever done on the show, and hopefully the fans will tune in and agree.
Well, thank you for your time. We need to wrap up.
Thank you.
Jewel State.
Now, I know you've gotten this question probably 100 times today, okay? Can you tell us a little bit about the transition from one sci-fi show to another? You know, working in science fiction, is it more complicated than doing other forms of drama? I mean, because, you know, we talked about the technobabble a little bit earlier. How does it work out?
I would say the technobabble is definitely the toughest part. Firefly and Stargate are so completely different in every way. You know, just completely different worlds, different time periods. But I would say the biggest difference for me is being on such a high-tech ship and being, you know, in the present day also. But yeah, they've given me all this doctor stuff to say, and I just got used to the mechanic stuff and, you know, trying to figure out how to act like I know what I'm talking about. And yeah, now they're giving me, you know, surgical tools, and I really do have to look capable. So it's been interesting.
So I heard an interview with Robert Cooper, and he said that you were doing an extraordinary job. So what kind of research did you do to play a doctor?
None. None at all. I was really hoping, because it was sci-fi, there was going to be a lot of made-up stuff and not necessarily the actual stuff that goes on in an emergency room. I was totally wrong. I've had to do all kinds of things. I've had to do CPR countless times and really complicated surgeries and really have to act like I know what I'm doing. So that's really nice of him to say, because I definitely felt a little green, especially for the first couple of weeks.
So you're saying the difference between Stargate and Firefly is, in Stargate you have to know what you're doing, in Firefly you didn't. Is that...
In Firefly, well, see, and Kaylee is, she has this natural ability. She's very comfortable with herself. She knows that crew so well. And Dr. Keller, I think, is a little nervous. She's very capable, but I don't think she realizes how capable she actually is quite yet. She's very smart, but she's also very young, and I think she feels like a lot is expected of her. Doesn't know everybody quite well. So yeah, there's a bit more of an apprehensive vibe going on there. And Kaylee's just so free and, you know, doesn't really care what anybody thinks of her. Except Simon.
Now, how is it to jump in on a show after it's already been going for 3 years and has an established mythology?
It's a bit strange, to be honest. Everybody has their thing going on. They know each other really well. They've got, you know, they're very comfortable with each other and their characters. And I don't know this character very well. And I wasn't told a lot about her, and I wasn't told about her backstory. So I kind of had to wing it for the first little while. But everybody's been really nice and, you know, try and make me feel comfortable and not so much the new kid.
Well, that lets you know that they trust you, too, that they let you just go for it.
Yeah, exactly. I guess you're right. Yeah, they do trust me, and they I think they expect me to know what to do. But sometimes it's nice to have a little bit of help, you know, in the backstory of the character and stuff. But I'm learning a little bit more about Dr. Keller every episode as we go. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. It's been great.
Thank you.
Oh, come on! Little heat's gonna cost me 40 minutes? Is that really how you want this to go down, huh? You wanna freeze me to death? You sure you wouldn't rather I imploded with you, you lemon? Do you even have an opinion anyways? You know why? Because you are an inanimate object, huh? Does that stop me from talking to you? Oh, no, 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 my inanimate friend, because I have been struck upon the head, you see? Hey, so...
David Hewlett.
All right, we are joined now with David Hewlett. How are you doing this Comic-Con?
Very good, very good. My geekiest best.
Very nice. Okay, we're just talking about literature. Who's your favorite science fiction author of all time?
Ooh, boy, that's a tough one. I love Ian Banks. I'm a big fan of his stuff. I read that a long time ago, actually. And I'm now into this Joe Scalzi guy.
John Scalzi.
John Scalzi, right. Okay, I got to get the names right. I knew there was a J in there somewhere. Yeah, I just read Android Dreams of his, which is I just loved. So that's the most recent one. Although I'm reading another one now, which I'm loving as well, called... I guess it's science fiction. It's time travel. It's Time Traveler's Wife, which I'm really, really liking. Sort of romantic, yeah. Sort of bouncing back and forth between...
I think they're making a movie on that one.
Oh, are they? Oh, dear. I mean, oh, great.
Well, maybe you can be in it.
I'm sure it'll be fantastic. But it's so funny with the books, you know. I always find there's a certain... You want to see the movies, but at the same time, you've just so much enjoyed the books that you don't want to... You almost don't want to let it go. It's like Dune. Oh, there you go. There's another one. Yeah. Dune, that series... Oh. Unbelievable. Love
now, the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries of it, I thought was pretty decent.
You know, I never saw it. I can't believe I never saw it. But I you know what it was? I didn't see the first one. I didn't want to see it without the rest of them, so I'll have to sit down and watch them all. But,
because you really need 6 hours to cover a book that big.
God, at least. Yeah. I mean, I actually quite enjoyed the feature as well. You know, the original one.
With Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Sting,
yeah. 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 Which is just kind of fun to fun to do. Sting running around those underwear. You can't. You know, it's just kind of funny.
I can miss that actually. So let's talk about you a little bit here, some Atlanta stuff.
Speaking of underwear.
Yeah. You run around in your underwear in this season.
All the time, pretty much, yes. Any chance to take my clothes off, that's me.
Okay, I don't mean offset stuff, all right. you have some experience as a director. I'm wondering how your experience as a director influences your craft of acting.
It's interesting because it's one of those things that I've worked with people who've directed before, and you don't want to let it affect you too much, because as an actor, it's not your job to be. You got to be worrying about what your character's doing, not what where you're standing and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think one of the biggest talents as an actor is to forget the technique, is to be able to do the stuff you need to do without really thinking about it. And one of the things I found so strange directing with The Dog's Breakfast was that. You know, I kept forgetting that I was supposed to be acting as well. Because you keep stepping back to make sure that everything is in the right place and everyone's saying the right thing and it's coming, into existence the way you want it to be. But so with Stargate's actually the big thing on the Atlantis set is, like, I got to forget that stuff, because it's someone else's responsibility. Right. It's funny because if you can do it, it's so much, all of a sudden my acting feels so much easier to do because you don't have the additional responsibility of directing and producing and all this sort of stuff, and writing.
I know this season, I heard you talking earlier in the other press conference that it sounds like your character is going to be going through some interesting changes this year. Can you tell us a bit about that and what challenges you had to portray your character that way?
Well, it's interesting because I think as much as McKay changes, he always stays the same. I mean, there's a certain core, a nasty black coal-like chunk of McKay that will never change. The damage is being done. But it's definitely, I think it's one of those, this is one of those seasons where we, as along with some, the wicked sort of, way out there sci-fi stuff, we've got this great opportunity to really mix things up with the characters, like interactions that wouldn't have happened last year, interactions that wouldn't have been possible last year. Amanda coming over to the show is fantastic because obviously we have this great history there that we get to keep. What's nice is in that kind of situation is you can proceed with new stories and have this wonderful sort of underlying sense of tension because you've already done that. All that homework's being done for you because you've already shot those episodes. You know the history of McKay and Sam Carter.
Now, McKay was starting to have a little bit of a romance in season 3 here. Does Carter's coming over jeopardize that?
There's some very, very funny stuff. Like, some of the funniest stuff this year is McKay struggling to come to terms with, A, the fact that she's there, B, the fact that he's had more of an imagined relationship with her now than he has had an actual relationship with her. Because more stuff has happened in his own mind between the two of them.
We all know what episode you're talking about. It was sick and wrong.
but it's so funny because you think about it. It's like, he keeps referring to that in his own mind. And I, even as a person, I just refer to it because it's an episode. Like, it was like we did that.
Right.
But it never existed. So there's that wonderful, again, there's a wonderful sort of backstory that gets to happen as the show progresses, where you get to just keep layering on things on top of all those, four seasons of the weight that the character gets. and the weight of the character. I've eaten a lot too. So it's really, I think McKay hasn't really changed, but what's interesting is I think we learn more about the way he is, why he is the way he is, by sort of just cracking open the way he normally reacts with people and forcing him into different kind of interactions. So, but this year, he's got Sam Carter, he's got Dr. Keller, with Jewel State, and his long-term girlfriend now, Katie Brown. So there's an episode coming up that should be really fun, which really mixes that up a bit. So,
all right. Well, sounds like a lot of fun. I got to let you go. So yes. Thank you for your time.
Oh, pleasure indeed.
Now, I'm no scientist. Those mice used to be a different color. This is never going to end.
Joe Flanagan.
Do you prefer Mr. Flanagan or Joe?
Joe. God. Please, Joe.
Does it feel the whole, that's my father's name kind of thing?
Yeah. Too formal for me. Your excellence, too. That's okay.
All right, Joe Excellence. That's what we'll do. Season 4. Lots of changes going on. What challenges have you had to get through as an actor with all the things going on set with new characters and changing story and all that?
Well, ironically, the biggest challenge is having the stamina and energy to pull off the schedule. You know, we're working. You know, I'm working every day top to bottom, which is 12 to 14 hours, and then I fly home and raise 3 boys. You know, so I'm flying out of the country every single week and then putting in those type of hours. So the ability to maintain your energy and get the right amount of sleep is the most challenging. And see, everybody else lives up there, so it's a slightly different, and they don't quite have the same schedules. They're not quite, you know, they're not in everything. So I've bitten off a big chunk, and it's difficult, but it only lasts about 7 months of the year, and then things get a little bit better. That's the biggest challenge. As far as the world of the show itself, the fictional elements, the hardest thing is shooting with green screen. It still is. It can be very challenging to work with all this phantom, these phantom elements. Things are blowing up, but they're on a green screen. You're talking to aliens, you know. I mean, these are all things that are very foreign to the classically trained actor, and I'm not a classically trained actor, however. But
you can imagine.
Conventionally trained actor, most people don't experience that type of stuff. And so keeping that level of urgency and that level of reality is sometimes tough. And thankfully, our show goes for a little bit of a wink of the eye in the process, which is, I think, it's saving grace.
Well, have there been times, talking about green screen here, where you're told something is going to be like this, you do your best to react appropriately for that situation, then you see the final cut and it's nothing what you expected?
A lot. And that's frustrating, because I'm hypercritical of the work that I do. I'm always looking for ways to improve it. I watch the dailies and everything else, and it's frustrating because you will see something that I would have done it different had I known that this so-called battle that's on the green screen was much bigger than you led me to believe. Yeah, exactly. So also they play around sometimes with the sequence of things, so, you know, and that's another thing. And that's where often when people judge actors and their performances, I tend to judge actors on a very different scale than your average viewer, because I know that actors can get hung out to dry by performing a certain thing and then finding it to be completely out of context.
Well, I've heard the editor has so much to do with it that a great editor can make a great show. Is that, you would agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Yeah, you know, those challenges probably aren't any different than any other show. The difficulty is, in fact, in the sci-fi gobbledygook and your average actor getting through the sci-fi world. We see a lot of guest stars freeze up with this material because they've got it pre-programmed that when we're doing science fiction, we talk like this and everything's a little strange. It's not our show, so getting guest stars to humanize themselves and everything else is there are challenges. Science fiction, I would strongly recommend to anybody who wants to be an actor, they should be exposed to science fiction acting, because it is an incredible challenge, and it's good material is very easy, and science fiction material can be very tricky.
Well, you make it look easy.
I'm getting paid.
So how much, I mean, you said you have about 5 months off a year, but is that when you're doing all this traveling, and are you looking at other projects to do during that time?
Yeah, other projects. Also, I like to travel a lot. There's a lot of times where I actually just want to go home, spend time with my family, and travel, see the world. One of the wonderful parts about doing this show, it affords you the luxury of not having to do certain projects that are not very good. And so I find myself not wanting to do a lot of things, and it's really nice.
So are you referring to things that you're offered?
Yeah. There's a lot of things that you get thrown your direction that you just you normally would have done, but now you have the ability to say, you know what? Actually, I don't want to spend January in Bulgaria. Without my wife and kids, I would rather be in Malibu and do that, because the project itself may not be all that great. And so it's kind of nice in that regard. It's probably the best aspect of our schedule.
Well, Joe Excellence, thank you for your time.
I'm less excellent after the interview, I'm sure.
Which, I'm sure, means nothing to you.
It means they could fire multiple bursts without having to store more power for the next firing sequence.
Yes. Very good.
Which leads me back to cool.
Hello, this is Hugo and Nebula Award-winning author Robert J. Sawyer, the author of Rollback, and you are listening to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing.
And there you have it. My Stargate Atlantis interview suite.
Sean, that was very fancy with the music and the background and
Thank you. The
clips. I'm very impressed.
One of the most fun things about that was watching all the DVDs and trying to find what clips I wanted to use, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry, honey. I've got to watch all the DVDs again because it's for my podcast.
I'm working here.
Yeah. This,
can't you see I'm
this
working?
This work. Pops open another beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you can do it while drinking, it's not real work, all right?
sure it is, right? Like that episode where we drink scotch, this is totally work.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, I've known people who do that at Starbucks, too. Oh, it's terrible. They get fired for it, but inevitably it happens where they're drinking alcohol in the back room and they come out and make your latte for you.
Ooh, yeah. Drinking, quote-unquote, Irish coffee.
Yeah, well, the customers don't get to partake in it. But no, normally it's beer, actually. Well, I never did this myself. I just know people who did, and I'm not saying it's okay. So, Sam, you wanted to add something about Comic-Con,
yeah,
didn't you?
I just wanted to say. We'll move on this subject because you're getting more and more comfortable.
Yeah.
It's totally Sean in the back room drinking beer. Anyways, I forgot to mention that at the industry party, I have to mention it to satisfy my fellow gaming nerds. I get to hang out with Blizzard Entertainment people. It made me very happy. In fact, the guy who did a lot of the artistic folks who didn't work on the game themselves, but who did the...
Okay, you need to stop. And for those of us who do not know what you're talking about, give us like 30 seconds of background here.
Blizzard is a huge gaming company. They're the ones who do StarCraft, Diablo,
okay.
And World of Warcraft.
I know all those.
And Warcraft, of course.
Never played any of them, but I've heard of all of them.
Yeah, well, that's because you are a noob, Sean.
I am.
Anyways.
I don't even know what that is, but I am.
I hope someday to get Sean on the game so that I could just follow him around calling him Noob Sauce. It'd be really fun. But anyways.
I have no idea what Noob Sauce is, but I want no part of it.
I'm totally going to grief his character. Anyways. So I got to hang out with some of these guys and talk to them a little bit.
Cool.
One of the guys had just I will show this to you, Sean. You should see it. It's beautiful. The trailer for StarCraft II, which all of you who are gaming nerds who... StarCraft is actually my favorite game that Blizzard ever made, even more than World of Warcraft. In fact, if they did a World of StarCraft, I would be so happy. So StarCraft II is finally coming out. It's been in the works for a long time, and people have been wanting it for a long time. And the trailer is gorgeous. So I met the guy who did the trailer, the cinematic trailer for it, and totally geeked out. And I just have to do a shout out to my Weta workshop friends. I only get to see them once a year since they live in New Zealand, but they are, talk about industry folks. I think maybe because they don't live in Hollywood and they're not corrupt. I don't know, but
they're not evil.
Yeah, they're not evil. I don't know, but they're the nicest, most genuine people. I mean, honestly, like Richard Taylor, who's won several Academy Awards, is so nice. He is such a nice guy.
You know, I gotta, Hollywood has a bad rap for that kind of thing.
I know it does. I know.
But, you know, I do acting here in San Diego. My acting coach worked in Hollywood for 30 years, and I've met producers and actors and stuff over the last couple of years from different things. And 95% of them are the nicest people. I think it's just like anything else. You have 5 or 10% who do the awful things
the
and have
apples.
The positions of power.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with like celebrities. People say, oh man, you don't want to be a celebrity. They all get stuck on drugs and they can't keep their marriages together, yada, 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 yada. But if you really think about it, you're just watching the same people go through the same crap year after year.
Yeah.
95% of actors are good people who have their lives together just fine, except for the fact that acting is inconsistent as far as the paycheck goes for most people.
Right. But
think about most actors that you enjoy. You don't hear about them because they go live in their house in Idaho when they're not working and
yeah.
stay out of trouble. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, I know. That was kind of an unfair statement I made. You know, I retract my statement. I'm sorry, Hollywood industry people who are listening.
I didn't mean to jump on you.
Don't send me hate mail and dead cockroaches.
Well, you know, I've had to deal with that perception a little bit because of the fact that I've been sort of pursuing stuff like that.
Right.
Because I have people say to me, why do you want to be a part of that? I thought you were a better person than that.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just doing what I love doing, you know?
Well,
and I'm not saying
that
you're
to
going
you?
There. Oh, people.
Listen.
People. I come from conservative circles.
I think that's a great goal for you. But the people I'm sure you're very good at it. I could see this for you. Anyways.
Thank you very much. If you'd like to see me in a trailer, go to aefilms.com/brighteyes. All right, go ahead.
I seriously did not set that up for him to make his own plug. Really, honest.
Okay, flip the page on the script. Right there.
No. Anyways, you're giving me a bad rap. Talk about giving a bad rap. Yeah, no. Everyone I have met who's part of, you know, quote unquote Hollywood circle has actually been very, very nice. But I was just surprised by, you know, he's won, I don't know, three Academy Awards, I think, maybe more, and just complete salt of the earth. Like, just so genuine, so kind. Gives everyone his time. People will stop him as he's walking around con and be like, oh, can I show you my, you know, sketches, and can I show you my portfolio? And he's like, well, I'm on my way to a meeting, but I'll look at it as I walk, and ask them pointed questions, and remembers everyone's names. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, anyway, so I just had to do a shout-out for Richard, because he's just wonderful. He's lovely.
And, you know, and I need to extend, once again, my gratitude to the Stargate folks for doing the interviews.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they would have been there doing them whether I was there or not, but the fact that they all treated me like it was their pleasure to be able to do it was really nice and surprising to some extent. I mean, I've heard good things about all these people, but I didn't expect them to make me feel like they were honored to be on my podcast, you know?
Yeah.
And especially Amanda Tapping, I didn't have time to interview her. I got a picture with her, but she seemed so saddened that she didn't get to do an interview with me. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Just, I got to run to this panel thing. And how cool is that?
You know,
you admire these people and they treat you like that. So,
guys,
thank you folks for doing it, being on the show. A lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. Indeed.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap this up. This has been an unusual episode for us. If you're listening for the first time, we normally have more content.
Yeah, informative substance in our podcast. But it was actually really fun reminiscing because, you know, Con is just an amazing experience and sharing that with you folks. Indeed, sharing that with you folks. So thank you for allowing us to share that with you.
And we're going to be back next week with our normal format. We have an interview with New York Times bestseller Jacqueline Carey.
Yay, Jacqueline!
And then Tobias Bakel will be back with another Ask a Writer segment. So we hope you'll come on back next week and check us out again. If you'd like to get in touch with us, let me see if Sam has the phone number memorized. No. You can give us a call at the voicemail line, 206-350-5029. Get your voice on the show. Or you can send us an email
at adventuresinscifipublishing@gmail.com.
And of course, drop on by the blog page, adventuresinscifipublishing.com. You never know who's going to be there. Joseph Malazzi actually left a comment on the blog, which was kind of cool for me. Yeah. Anything else we need to touch on? I feel like I'm missing something. Conjecture.
Indeed. Yes. We're going to be at Conjecture, which is a science fiction convention here in San Diego coming up.
And but we're not just going to be there.
We are, I believe, going to be part of some panels.
We're guests.
We are guests.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about that, to talk about podcasting and perhaps a little bit about my bookstore. And as you know, I'm the young adult program coordinator, so talking about young adult science fiction and fantasy.
And I'm excited just because it's a very small convention, which will be a nice change from Comic-Con. And it's the first time I've been invited as a guest before.
Yeah, me too.
So that was pretty cool. I was like, hey, how about that? And then if you look on their website, it's conjecture.org. They have some panel voting going on right now, so you can help determine what panels actually get placed in the final programming. So it looks like that we'll be doing at least two panels, and I might be doing a little seminar also, if there's enough interest. I'll put in a link in the show notes. If you're in San Diego and you want to come to a small con and meet up with us, some other people are Werner Vinge, Larry Nivens, the guest of honor, Nancy Holder, Tim Pratt. We're all going to be there. Stop on by and check it out. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think you'll have a good time. And one last thing, it is being small, it is a complete departure from the craziness of Comic-Con, but in a way, there's some really good things about that, because it's really intimate. So you get to have a lot of one-on-one conversations.
Exactly.
You know, the authors are just kind of walking around the floor. You stop them and, you know, talk to them, have a coffee with them, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so, you can actually do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can't do that even at Worldcon. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah. So it is, I would think, a really worthwhile con to attend. And yeah. I think Mysterious Galaxy may be there as a bookseller, too.
I think that's it for us. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us.
Keep reading.
Music for Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing by Cargo Cult, from their song Dirt. You can learn more about them at magnatune.com. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to a Singularity Audio production. To learn more, please visit www.singularityaudio.com. And then Tobias Bakel will be back with another Ask a Writer segment.
Yay, Toby.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I'll cut that out. No one will ever know that I just regurgitated in my throat.
You just threw up a little bit in your mouth.
Yeah. I'm chewing it back down.
Gross.
Okay, I need a couple seconds of cutting silence here.